This is episode 6 of the Social Entrepreneur Podcast with David Auerbach of Sanergy.
And so what we've worked on is creating, you know, an aspirational brand that focuses on, you know, a high quality, luxurious experience that is also highly affordable too.
Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. You might be curious about what it was that David Auerbach was talking about in that first little intro that you heard, and how he was talking about a luxury item, and he was talking about their company, Sanergy. So if you're wondering what that is, it's a toilet. That's right, a toilet. And so there's more than 7 billion people on the planet, and yet 2.4 billion, that's about one third of the entire world's population, do not have access to a basic toilet. Now, you might wonder why that's a problem, because if I am in the middle of the desert and I just walk over somewhere and I use a toilet, I just go outside, what's the harm? Well, part of the problem is an ever-increasing concentration of what's called informal dwellings. So we might, in a less polite way, refer to these as slums. And what's happening is there is this sort of global urbanization. And so people are moving out of the countryside near cities. And as they are near cities, they are just putting up these shanty towns or these informal dwellings. And as they do, they don't have toilets. And of course, they still have to defecate. Here's the problem is sanitation related illnesses kill 1,000 children per day. According to the United Nations, sanitation related illnesses kill 1,000 children per day. Well, November 19th is World Toilet Day. And leading up to and going through World Toilet Day, the social entrepreneur is going to focus on this area of sanitation. Today, we're going to have David Auerbach of Sanergy. And then later in the week, on Wednesday, we're going to have another guest speaking about a similar project in a similar vein. But this is an important issue. It is an important global issue. It's an important human issue. We're going to hear from David today, and he's going to talk about how he and his colleagues went from a laboratory in MIT to living in Nairobi, Kenya. Let's just let David tell his story. Here's David Auerbach of Sanergy.
Hi, my name is David Auerbach, and I'm one of the co-founders of Sanergy, based in Nairobi, Kenya.
David, what is Sanergy?
Sanergy is a social enterprise that is working to improve access to hygienic sanitation for residents of urban slums, starting here in Nairobi.
Okay, and where did this come from? How did you start? How did you come together?
We started while we were graduate students at MIT, where we were in a class that challenged us to come up with a business solution to a poverty challenge.
And who is we?
Yeah, so our founding team had 3 MBA students, myself, Ani Vallabhaneni, and Lindsay Stradley. And then we had 2 engineers, one a civil engineer and one an industrial designer, who made up the rest of the team. This started during 2010 and 11.
And you were at MIT. Was this a particular, like an entrepreneurial lab kind of? What was the class that brought you together?
That's right. It was a class called Development Ventures, which is hosted by the MIT Media Lab in partnership with a couple of other schools there, including the business school. And it challenges students to come together to develop a solution to a poverty challenge that affects the lives of over a billion people.
When you signed up for it, did you picture the fact that you would be living in Nairobi and doing this?
I mean, that's the beauty of those classes, is that you get to develop your ideas and, you know, who knows where the road will take you if you follow it after that first semester.
And what do you think, for you personally, David, what do you think compelled you to sign up for this particular course?
Yeah, no, I mean, I come from a family where my mother is a psychologist and social worker, and my father is an economist. And so, you know, always in my upbringing, there's been both a sort of a business sense and values around, you know, fighting for social justice. And so I've always been really intrigued by that. So my prior stops in my career included working at a nonprofit called Endeavor, which works with entrepreneurs in the developing world to create jobs and have huge economic impact. And then also at the Clinton Foundation, where I helped build partnerships so that the private sector and the public sector could come together to solve big social challenges. Yeah. So all of those experiences, you know, came together and got me excited about this class at MIT.
And so when the team was formed, how did you form your team within the course?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of speed dating that happens within the course, but I had also met some of my co-founders during orientation, and, you know, we found that we really got along well and shared similar worldviews, and as a result, then when we took the class together, we were naturally drawn to working together as a group.
And how did you settle in on sanitation being the issue you wanted to tackle?
We all had very different experiences that I think informed our interest in this. For me in particular, it was being a teacher in China straight after I graduated from undergraduate, from college. And I lived there for 2 years and really recognizing just how much I had taken for granted having hygienic sanitation any and everywhere when I lived in the U.S., and, you know, and that really motivated me to think more about this challenge, you know, which affects, you know, 4.1 billion people throughout the developing world.
So you came together in the class, you were thinking, you brought in this idea about sanitation. I'm sure others were already thinking of this and other ideas. So how did you settle on that then? If you had multiple co-founders, how did you make that decision?
Well, you know, we came up with this very simple idea around a franchise model, and then thanks to the generosity, of MIT, we were able to travel in once we completed the class for the month of January of 2010, and that enabled us to travel to Kenya to sort of research, you know, the idea that we had and to have a much better understanding of some of these huge statistics around urban sanitation that were so daunting. And once we got here to Kenya, we went into the slums where we met a youth group. So it was about 20 men who were actually running a toilet as a business. Noticed that, and they were so excited to show us this business, and it was amazing because, you know, they were really trying to change the community for themselves in an economically smart way. However, you know, the toilet that they had some both functional and fashionable challenges. You know, from a functional perspective, it was like really hard for them to get waste out of the community just based on the design of it. And then from like a fashionable perspective, you know, even though they were offering, you know, friendly customer service and, you know, all sorts of good things like toilet paper and guaranteeing hand washing, they weren't branding themselves really well. And so we realized that if we could provide that support, we could provide support sort of on the technical side and on the marketing side, and then combine that with their entrepreneurial spirit, we had a good recipe for success.
For people who don't have a good sort of visual idea about what the problem is, as the story unfolds, we're going to hear more about the whole ecosystem that you're putting together. But there's the problem of this informal dwellings in urban settings and how they normally manage sanitation and why that's an issue. So can you talk a little bit about that sort of, you know, the problem with the informal housing, how they manage sanitation and why that's an issue?
Sure. In Kenya's urban slums, about 8 million people lack access to hygienic sanitation. Right now, they resort predominantly to three options. The vast majority are using pit latrines, which are, you know, no more than pits that people are paying to use because they offer a little bit of privacy. Alternatively, they will use what are called flying toilets. So these are plastic bags. And this option offers some privacy and convenience, but is clearly not dignified nor hygienic. The third option that people have is using large community toilets. And these are generally sort of, you know, they're big, so they're expensive to install, which, you know, already creates sort of a little bit of, you know, creates donor dependency. And then secondly, you know, because they're big, they have to be put in places that are quite far from where people are living, on the fringes of the slums. And so that makes them highly inaccessible at night, particularly for women and children. So you have three pretty not so great options. And then that doesn't even get into the question of where the waste goes. The vast majority of the waste is being dumped into rivers and waterways, usually by people who are doing manual collections, putting themselves at a huge public health risk. It's being dumped being dumped into rivers and waterways. Over 90% of the waste is never treated, you know, and so this ends up being a huge public health challenge and an economic challenge, which results in, you know, about 20,000 children dying every year due to sanitation related disease, and the Kenyan GDP, according to the World Bank, is losing about $1 million a day in lost productivity and increased healthcare costs.
About how many children?
About 20,000 children dying every year.
Right. And that's mainly through intestinal or diarrhea or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, diarrhea related disease.
Yeah. So that's the problem that you saw when you came here. So there are all these options, none of which are really good for the slum dwellers. And the problem is big. There are 8 million of them, and there are all these negative consequences. So what did you do? What's your solution?
Our solution at Sanergy is to take a full value chain approach to solving the sanitation challenge. And we do this in three main steps: build, collect, convert. So first we build a dense network of low-cost, high-quality toilets called Fresh Life Toilets, which we've actually designed in-house. And we distribute these toilets throughout the slums through a franchise model. So we sell them to residents of the community who operate them predominantly as a small business. So they charge, so they invest, and then they charge residents a nominal usage fee so that they're able to derive an income from this. We also have other two other distribution models. One is working with community institutions like schools, and the third is a residential model where we work with landlords who are able to provide it as a value-add service to their tenants. In all three cases, we then provide critical support services. So this ranges from training to branding and marketing to government and community relations. And then we also collect the waste every single day, or pretty much every single day, and take it out of the community to a centralized facility where we're then processing it and treating it by converting it into a nutrient-rich organic fertilizer that we're then able to sell on to Kenyan farms to address food security challenges.
And you're on the ground there, right? So you have you employ local people to help you build these sanitation stations. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So we, so we're now a team of about 250 people, 93% of whom are Kenyan and 60% of whom are from the communities that we serve. So this is a company that has developed really, really good jobs all along the sanitation value chain, ranging from constructing and installing toilets to doing marketing and branding work to waste collection to the processing and sale of the treated waste.
Now, as people think about these sanitation stations, they should not think about people go in and they use a flush toilet, right?
Yeah. So given that water is a premium resource within the communities, we wanted to make sure that we could design with that constraint in mind. And so what we have is actually a dry facility that doesn't involve any water, which saves thousands of gallons of water every single year.
So when people go into these stations, they use them. They drop some sawdust on top. Just describe the experience for me. So I have, and how many shillings does it cost me to go in and to use one of these stations approximately?
So if you were to visit a Fresh Life toilet, you would be greeted by one of our operators. She would charge, we defer to the entrepreneur about what they want to charge. So typically it's about 5 cents though per use. The operator would, welcome you and then would also give you toilet paper, and you'd go into the toilet and do your business. And then when you're done, the operator, or you would put a little bit of sawdust over solid waste because that actually absorbs odor and serves as a nice cover. And then you'd step out, and we have hand washing stations with soap that are just outside of the facility, and you can wash your hands and be fresh and be on your way.
Okay, and so that's my experience, and I'm the but then the operator has an experience there. But then somebody comes along on a routine basis and they collect this waste.
Yeah. And so the collector is someone who's a full-time employee on our team from the community, and he has proper PPE. Has mask, glove, boots, a uniform, training. We provide inoculations, and he'll arrive at the toilet, and there's always within a set couple of hours each day that he comes. He lifts up, the cartridges in which the waste is collected is beneath the toilet. He seals those cartridges, pulls them out, puts them on a hand cart, and then replaces them with clean cartridges. And then he puts them on the hand carts, and then the hand carts take the waste or take the filled cartridges to the perimeter of the slums, where then we have trucks that take it out to a much larger processing plant.
Okay, and the trucks go out to the processing plant, and what happens there?
Sure. So at the processing plant, which is about 30 kilometers, 20 miles outside of Nairobi, we have a large site where we're then treating the waste by converting it into organic fertilizer. We do that by a accelerated box composting process. So sort of imagine how you compost in your backyard, but doing that sort of as far as the eye can see. And then over a 4 to 6 month process, we treat the waste and convert it into this nutrient-rich organic fertilizer that's pathogen-free and is doing wonders on Kenya's depleted soils.
And in your business model originally, I think you had an idea about capturing off gases and creating energy mm-hmm. from that.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. So we should say that we also have an extensive amount of R&D going on right now, of which one of those key projects is biogas. You know, that's something that we have found that you need to be at a huge scale at for the economics of it to truly make sense. But we've been making steady progress in expanding our biogas operations over the last couple of years.
This is a fascinating business that you have, and I kind of like your founding story and about the fact that you came together. Now, what do you think prepared you personally to be in Nairobi and to be working in these informal housing units and to be able to take on, not just the challenge of being an entrepreneur, but being an entrepreneur in this really complex system?
Yeah, it's a great question. The notion of what we came up with in that original class, I think, it's a little bit preposterous, right, as an idea. And there's so many times when you can just be, especially in the early stages, where you can be like, this has been a lot of fun, but this isn't something that I want to do. And I think in my co-founders, I have found just incredible support, respect, just pure enjoyment of doing the work with them, and I think that really has compelled us as a leadership team. And I think that, then as that has grown, as we have grown, this energy family has grown, we attract teammates who enjoy that too. And really building up a company like that, and what we're trying, and just the audacity of what we're trying to achieve, but having teammates who really, are on the same page and want to be doing that too, gives me so much motivation and helps me persevere even though in the tough times.
So I want to back up just a moment to some of the empathy work that you did. So you were, you're coming up with these ideas and part of your empathy, I would imagine, was from your experience when you were in China. So you knew a little bit firsthand about challenges of sanitation and a different way of thinking about it than most Americans do. But when it came time to actually go there and to go and to get on the ground, what did you and your team do to really gain that sense of empathy for the potential customers for your business?
I was always struck by the concept of the ugly American, both me, I grew up in the UK, although it's not that different from growing up in the US. I realized I was very much in the minority. And then secondly, just sort of throughout history, that concept of the ugly American and learning about that and something I was very, very sensitive to. And I think that, we brought that collectively brought that sensitivity to the approach, to our approach, right? Which is to say, all of the ideas that we have come from the community, and everything that you see in our approach is actually validated by the community, right? And that starts with the design of the toilet, where We just spend, our team spent hours in the community interviewing people, trying to understand, you know, what were their demands, what were their unrealized demands, you know, what were their needs. And then the model is, of course, predicated on entrepreneurs purchasing this. So people from the community, you know, buying the toilet and saying, this is something that I'm going to put my hard-earned savings into. And if that succeeds, you know, and I think this will succeed, you know, and that is a much more credible pitch to the rest of the community than us coming in saying, we've designed the best toilet and you should be using it. And instilling that mindset throughout our whole organization, you know, and not just among the farm staff, but also, you know, our, you know, a lot of our team didn't grow up in the slums, but and are from Kenya too. And so how do we instill that as a, you know, as an approach?
When you were in the lab and you made some designs, you know, the old saying is no battle plan ever survives first contact with the enemy. So, so when you were in the lab and you were designing things, and then you show up in Nairobi and you go out into the slum areas, what changed from what you thought was going to happen when you were in the lab until you are implementing today?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that we quickly realized, not being originally toilet engineers ourselves, is that, you know, most toilet designs were designed by males, by men. And so for a lot of toilet designs, and this is more for squat toilets than seated toilets, women's experience is not really accounted for. And so one thing we found that we had a squat plate that we were just buying off the shelf initially because we, you know, we weren't producing at a scale where we could do a better, we could do our own squat plate. And we found that, you know, women were extremely uncomfortable because they would have to shuffle back and forth. So it's a little bit technical, but, you know, and it just wasn't very convenient for them. You know, how, you know, we had to spend, we have these great photographs in our research report where, you know, we were getting people to use water guns to show what their sanitation experience was like. And, you know, it was a sort of a funny way to do that because, of course, going to the bathroom is quite private and quite sensitive. And that enabled us to then build, you know, when a couple years later, when we were actually designing our own squat plate, to really build, come up with a design that then met the demands of the whole community in a, you know, in a sensible way.
I love that story. That's a great story about how you overcame so many obstacles to gain a sense of empathy for the customer experience and still protect their privacy. That's a great story. Is Sanergy itself, is it a nonprofit or a for-profit company?
So Sanergy has two entities. We have a nonprofit and a for-profit. The nonprofit work focuses on the really complex work around behavior change in the communities that we're serving. And that ranges from, getting service delivery models so that we can get toilets as close and as convenient as possible to people for all situations of the day and night, as well as doing a lot of demand generation work and trying to, you know, trying to make sure that we reach 100% coverage in the communities that we're serving. And the for-profit focuses on sort of the larger capital-intensive infrastructure needed for any holistic sanitation system to operate. So that includes dump trucks and treatment centers and manufacturing facilities. It's a bit complicated, but this Sanergy for-profit designs toilets, but then they sell and they actually sell it to the nonprofit, who then distributes it through the slums and partners with, you know, the operators who run toilets. So, and it's just sort of for simplicity of, you know, of where the nonprofit gets involved and where the for-profit is involved.
Right. For the locals, though, you are creating these pure for-profit businesses that have a social benefit in the fact that they're providing this sanitation solution for the local community.
Yeah, that's right. And it's one face to the community.
Yeah. When did you build your first toilet there?
We launched our first toilet in the Makuru slum of Nairobi on World Toilet Day, which is November 19th, coming up in 2011.
And that's 4 years ago from now. And so how many of these toilets do you have now?
We currently have a network of 764 toilets launched that are used just over 30,000 times every day.
Wow. One of the tools that you're using, and I think this is fascinating to me as a business executive, one of the tools that you're using to take on this problem is branding. And I think that's fascinating. Do you want to talk for a second about the role of your brand in the slums?
Sure. You know, if you look at what sells, it's often in if you just take the pure for-profit sector, you know, it's great brands, right? If you imagine, you know, Coca-Cola and how it's so through their branding and marketing persuades you that you're living a cool life, you know, and two, that you, there's always a situation where you should be drinking a Coca-Cola. You know, that's impressive, right? But that's pure marketing, right? And, you know, we thought about that, you know, about how important that is with something like toilets too, right? No one's going to change their behavior because you're going to reduce the incidence of, it will reduce the incidence of sanitation-related disease in their life, right? People don't think like that. You know, we might know that that's true, but that's not going to change our behavior. And so what we've worked on is creating, you know, an aspirational brand that focuses on, you know, a high quality, luxurious experience, that is also highly affordable too. And, you know, really believing and seeing great results on that approach in influencing people's behavior. I liken it most to going to the gym. If the doctor tells you to go to the gym because your cholesterol levels are high, that's not going to really inspire you. But if, you know, you're going to go to the gym because there's the prospect of finding a beautiful mate through that, that will actually motivate you to want to go more often. and so we've applied that logic to what we're trying to do.
So for people who are considering this journey, or people who are on the path already and they're just getting started and they're maybe one or two steps behind you, what advice would you have for that person?
My advice is, I mean, you have to recognize that you are taking on some of the hardest work in the world, right? Not only, you know, are you an entrepreneur as part of the social entrepreneurs, you're by definition starting something new, but then you're taking on a social challenge in which, in many cases, like sanitation, like you're not operating in an efficient market. You know, it's not like the latest sort of technology coming out of Silicon Valley. You're focusing on a problem that, you know, the status quo is failing. So just being super cognizant of how hard that work is. And then recognizing that, you know, you won't have all the answers. In fact, you can't have all the answers. And just how important it is to listen. I would say listen, you know, and that's to everybody. That's to the people you're trying to serve in the community, listening to mentors and boards, because, you know, they have, of course, not done exactly what you have done, but have always seen something in their experience that they're good, will know how to share those experiences with you. And don't be afraid to take all the support you can get. Because the notion that you alone will solve any of these challenges is preposterous.
If people wanted to reach out to Sanergy on the web or social media, how would they do that?
Sure. Yeah. To reach out to Sanergy. So our email is info@saner.gy. That email address still goes straight to the founders. And then we have an active Facebook page, facebook.com/Sanergy. Our Twitter handle is Sanergy. And then our website is saner.gy.
All right. So if anyone goes to sanergy.com, they're going to be lost, aren't they?
It does not redirect, unfortunately.
David, before I leave it to you to give us a challenge or a call to action for the listeners. Again, I wanted to go back to something I was saying just a little while ago. I just want to acknowledge you and the team for taking on such a complex problem and for having the perseverance to work in this area that is not exactly glamorous, right? But it's such a huge need that you and the team have taken on. So you've taken it on despite all the obstacles, despite all the complexities, despite all the cultural things that you need to sort out. So I just want to acknowledge you for that and just say thanks for doing that.
Well, thanks, Tony. That's so kind of you to say that. And, you know, we do think it's glamorous, but we know we're a small minority. We do appreciate you saying such kind things. Like, you know, we really are, I mean, day to day, it is, you know, of course the work is incredibly challenging. And so when, you know, people take the time to say, to really recognize the larger accomplishments that we've been able to enact over the past 4 years, it means a lot to us.
Well, and pass my thanks on to your team then. So now the last thing, a call to action. So if there were, you know, people are listening to the podcast so they can just go on with their lives today and they're driving their car, they're out for a run or they're at the gym and they're listening to the podcast. But if you had a call to action for them, what would you ask of them?
That's a tough question. I mean, of course, if you want, you can help Sanergy out by going to the Kiva website where, you know, our operators, you can actually help finance their Fresh Life businesses. So that is one call to action that I highly recommend. But I think, you know, what Sanergy stands for is Sanergy's approach is really focused on systems thinking. And I think that I imagine that a lot of your listeners are interested in how does development work? And spending some time thinking about, you know, on your run about how systems really work, you know, how are you able to provide quality education in a sustained way? How are you able to provide quality sanitation in a sustained way? And it's like such a tough question. And, you know, we see so many solutions out there. But really, you know, spending a few minutes thinking about that, I think can start to shape people's view on development.
That's great. So systems thinking, I like that. I appreciate that. Okay. So David, thanks so much for being on the podcast, on the Social Entrepreneur Podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Tony.
Well, that's this episode of the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks for being with us today. You can find the show notes at tonyloyd.com/006. That's TonyLoyd with one L, tonyloyd.com/006. There you're going to find the link to Sanergy, and also you will find link to the Kiva website. David mentioned Kiva. The other thing I will include is a link to World Toilet Day. So thanks so much for being with us today. And until next time, use this life, this one short, amazing life, and go make an impact.